Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management. Thank you for joining us once again for Not Artificially Sweetened, our journey into exploring all things diabetes. As usual, in studio with me, my good friend and colleague, Dr. Stan Landau.
Hello, Michael, and hello to all our listeners out there.
It's great to see that the number of countries with listeners listening to us has moved up to 32, and the last three countries that have joined us, India, France, and Argentina, great for us. And please remember that you can catch us on our top four platforms, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, and the Listen mobile audio app.
Listeners, give us a like, give us a share on your favorite social media platform. And as always, we're happy to take your questions, comments, or thoughts on this podcast or any of the previous podcasts at our email at podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. This podcast is recorded live in our homes, respectively. Michael and I are our in-house studio guest, and I look out the window here in Johannesburg. You can't but help see the leaves falling off the trees, and that is a big signal for us here in March that winter is around the corner. And it's important because from the early weeks of March now till the first week of June, this is the time of year we start thinking about using the influenza vaccination as a means of cutting down on the harms that flu brings with each season. And people with diabetes are one of those vulnerable groups, so here is an opportunity, listeners, to start booking your flu jab over the next several weeks to ensure that come the first week of June, you've done your good deed for the year as an important preventative aspect for your well-being going forward.
Absolutely. I'm still get mine. 20th of March is World Oral Health Day. And the theme for this year is a happy mouth is a happy body. And this reminds us of the intricate connection between oral and systemic health. I don't know what it was like for you, Stan, but I remember when I trained that the field of oral health was referred to as dentistry because we really looked at dental care as a sort of tooth mechanic specialty in medicine. But since then, we've moved on. We've realized that the oral cavity is not just a pie hole filled with varying numbers of choppers that need fillings for holes and crowns and so on. But now we realize that the oral cavity is a complex anatomical and physiological place in the body, and that it is intimately connected with the systemic health. More than 3.5 billion people around the world, that's about half of the world's population, are affected by oral diseases. And to align with World Oral Health Day and its theme, we've decided to dedicate this episode to an exploration of oral health. No better than that is our studio guest, Dr. Tamani Daniel Mafajani, also known as Dr. Dan. Now, I just wanted to make a point. I think, Stan, you'd have to agree our guests to date have uniformly been awesome. They really have.
Absolutely agree with that. And as you'll read in his bio, Michael, when you go through it in a moment, we've invited him back to this social media platform because he had presented at our organization's annual Healthcare Practitioner Congress in November of 2023.
Yes. So Dr. Mafajani was one of our guest facilitators of the session on oral health, and he impressed the socks off me, really. Brilliant abstract, brilliant presentation. And I said to Stan, if we want to explore oral health, there's no better person to bring onto our show. So Dr. Dan is a specialist periodontist. He's also the head of the clinical unit of the Department of Oral Medicine and Periodontology at the School of Oral Health Sciences at the University of the Witwatersrand. Dr. Mafajani gained his Bachelor of Dental Therapy degree in 1998, followed by a Bachelor of Dental Science degree in 2004, and a Master of Dentistry in Oral Medicine and Periodontics in 2018. Dr. Mafajani is involved with clinical teaching and training of undergraduate and postgraduate students, and also involved in postgraduate research supervision of Master of Dental Science students. He is passionate about the management of periodontitis in people living with diabetes in collaboration with their diabetes team clinicians. And I can vouch for that. What a wonderful speaker he really was at our forum. His life interest aligns with one of my interests, a fervent roadrunner, and he has the goal of running the ultimate human race one day, the Comrades Marathon, something that escapes me. I prefer to go for shorter distances, but good on you for that. And with all that said, Dr. Tumani Mafajani, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much, Michael, and good morning to you and Stan. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be back online, especially on this global platform, your 46th podcast, and it's a great pleasure to be here.
So, Michael, Dr. Dan's not our first WITS graduate we've had in studio. And speaking of comrades, it just harks back to Bruce Fordyce, who's a WITS grad and comrade. So perhaps, Dr. Dan, we can put you together with Bruce, and with his legacy, we'll get you across that comrades finish line in good time. But Michael makes an interesting point in the bio that perhaps for a lot of our listeners and perhaps for medical doctors, those who haven't gone through the dental school, that there is this entity of periodontology, which perhaps is a mystical term. You know, people tend to think of dentists, but what we're hearing here is that dentistry is a much more specialized science. So share with us just before we get going, what is periodontology? What's a dental specialist and what else are dental specialists?
Yes, thank you very much, Stan, for that question. Periodontology is a study, the science of periodontology, as it were, but then you qualify as a periodontist. In fact, you are an oral medicine and periodontist specialist when you qualify. It's a 4-year master's in dentistry degree that one can study for. And we have other dental specialties that people can study for. We have an orthodontist, you know, braces and that. Mm-hmm. We have a maxillofacial, oral and maxillofacial surgeon who does a lot of facial reconstruction and trauma cases to the head and neck region. And we also have oral pathology specialists who do a lot of diagnosis for all oral mucosa-related lesions and tumors, etc. So we work very closely, in fact, as an oral medicine specialist myself, with oral pathologists. And we also have community dentists, community dentistry as a specialty, where they do community-based projects in and around communities and also as part of extended training platforms in our institution. Those are the main specialties that I can recall. So as an oral medicine and a periodontist specialist, we focus on patients who suffer from periodontitis, which I will get to as we carry on with our podcast.
Most people will be familiar with a dentist, somebody they go to perhaps for an annual, biannual checkup, somebody who may have filled a cavity or a filling, as it used to be called in my day, with the mercury and whatnot. And in more recent years, this has become much more prevalent. And we've invited you specifically on because, as Michael alluded to, it dovetails very nicely with World Oral Health Day. Share with us oral health in general, why it's so important. You could argue, if I have a toothache, I'll go see the dentist. But much more is being made of this now. Mm. A happy mouth is a happy body. What's the connection there?
Yes, very true. In the field of periodontology or as a periodontist, the interest is so much so that there is a specific, I will call it a new field or an avenue that we are exploring, which is called periodontal medicine. So periodontal medicine will look at all the conditions that have impact on periodontitis and or that puts patients at risk of developing periodontitis. And this is where diabetes comes in as a non-communicable disease, etc. But if you look at oral health as part of systemic health, we know that even in Michael's introduction that, you know, oral cavity is sort of a gateway into the systemic health. And one of the first signs of systemic health, or if a patient has some systemic condition, some of the manifestations, early manifestations actually are picked up in the oral cavity. And in the advent of HIV and AIDS, when it first appeared in the 80s, the first oral manifestations of HIV were in the mouth. Candidiasis being one of them, and Kaposi's sarcoma, and even necrotizing periodontal diseases in their various forms. So it is a gateway in a sense. Mm. As oral health practitioners, when we look in the mouth, we should spare a moment and look at all the mucosal areas and see for any possible signs of connection to systemic health, oral cancer being one of the things that we look out for, especially with patients who are smokers, etc. As oral health practitioners, we play a very critical role in identifying potential systemic health disorders. As a matter of fact, certain patients who didn't even know that they had diabetes, just by coming to a perio for a consult or a seasoned oral healthcare practitioner who knows what to look out for, if you identify that the destruction that you see in the oral cavity is not comparable with what we normally see in patients who suffer periodontitis, just by referring the patient to do a diabetes test, you may find that we are able to assist the patient in that way in finding out that they actually have diabetes, normally type 2 diabetes, and in that way we can refer them for further management.
Thanks so much for clarifying that.
So given that our audience consists of both healthcare professionals and people with diabetes, maybe let's just review some of the anatomical structures within the mouth, just quite simply to clarify that for our audience, some of the physiological mechanisms, and maybe just to discuss whether the mouth is a sterile place or not, and the implications of that.
Yes, the oral cavity is full of bugs. We know this in their millions.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So should we try and kill them all?
Well, many of them are what are called normal commensals.
Right.
They are in harmony, in homeostasis with the general milieu in the oral cavity. It's only when the equilibrium shifts for one reason or the other that the bacteria now become pathogenic.
Right.
And one of the normal or the common commensal, it's your fungal organism.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, you also have periopathogens that exist alongside your other fungus and viruses to a certain extent. So let's not kill the bacteria yet. We can coexist in harmony, provided we do our part in terms of keeping the equilibrium in check. So if you look at the oral cavity and you look, you know, I'm biased towards the periodontium, which is where the periodontology comes in, and periodontitis by extension. So the periodontium, it actually consists of the tooth itself, the gingiva surrounding the tooth.
So just to make it clear, the gingiva, the gums.
The gum, yes, the gum.
Mm-hmm.
The periodontal ligaments, which are holding the tooth in suspension, and the alveolar. So if you look at this periodontal disease, those are the conditions that we're talking about. You've got gingivitis, Michael, on the one hand, and you've got periodontitis on the other. So I think most people will be familiar with gingivitis, commonly referred to as inflammation of the gums. The gums bleed when you brush occasionally. Sometimes when you floss, you may find that the gums bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, when you bite on an apple, you can get a surprise there. But gingivitis, it is reversible in a sense that if you maintain good oral hygiene, you visit your dentist every 6 months, you brush, you floss, you rinse, you can actually reverse the gingivitis itself. The periodontitis, on the other hand, it's an irreversible condition of this periodontium, meaning the plaque, the bacteria that we normally have now in the mouth, have accumulated to a point where they are sitting now under the gum. And the more they stay under the gum, the more our patients do not actually remove the plaque that is sitting under the gum. And if you're not regular with your dentist, then you can get these bacteria going deeper under the gum and start causing attachment loss, which involve loss of alveolar bone and eventually progress into periodontitis and subsequent loss of teeth, which is the commonest loss of teeth in adult population due to unmanaged periodontitis. So that's in a nutshell the oral cavity as we see it from the periodontist point of view.
I'll tell you where we see this in clinical practice. We see it in people who've got gum and tooth disease, who perhaps have loose teeth or teeth that have fallen out, bleeding gums. And Michael, time and again, it impacts the kinds of foods that they need to eat. And they'll go away and eat sloppy food and things that go down quickly. Fruit juices, soft drinks, sweetened soft drinks, really carbohydrate-rich foods, because it's unpleasant or near impossible to chew, particularly on animal proteins, which you need a good set of teeth and gums to do that.
Mm.
And often they present with worsening of their diabetes management. And right at the first part of entry of food, which we've said so many times in this podcast, is central to all the things diabetes. Just having a lousy mouth, lousy set of teeth, unhealthy gums can actively impact for the worse on your blood glucose. That's a key point, but I want to dig deeper here, because what we've been saying today is that the mouth is representative of what's happening at a far deeper level. So, Tumani, tell us now, if a person presents with the gum and tooth diseases you've described, clearly they have an oral problem. But from what you're telling us, it extends far more beyond just their mere mouth and has a net negative impact on their body as a whole. How does that work out?
Let's say a person who has periodontitis, which is a chronic inflammatory condition with a multifactorial etiology. So because of the chronicity of the condition and the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, this can have a negative effect in the management of diabetes. And this has been proven in studies, review and randomized clinical trial studies, where there is a bidirectional relationship between periodontitis and diabetes mellitus, particularly type 2 diabetes. So diabetes mellitus, it's actually a risk factor for someone developing periodontitis, and that has been proven. So we know that diabetes is an uncommunicable disease, which can come as a result of lifestyle diseases, as we put it. So if you have periodontitis and you also have diabetes and your diabetes is not managed properly, or say for argument's sake, the patient is not even aware that they have diabetes, the periodontitis can be exacerbated by uncontrolled diabetes. Similarly, if a patient has diabetes and they also have periodontitis and they don't get managed for their periodontitis, this can have a negative impact on the glycemic control of their diabetes because of the pro-inflammatory cytokine milieu that works interchangeably or bidirectionally between the two conditions. By controlling the periodontitis, which is where I come in, and managing such patients, getting all the bacterial load and the pro-inflammatory cytokine reduced, in a way, it will actually have a beneficial effect on the glycemic control. And this has been seen with the HbA1c score as a measure of glycemic control over a period of 3 months. And this is what we use in our care of patients who have periodontitis.
It's good to know that, because very often in the presence of poorly managed diabetes, practitioners are quick to change insulin and we're quick to implicate this, that, and the other. But what you're actually telling us is that appraisal and assessment of your oral cavity is no less important than having your insulin technique modified and ensuring that you're giving your injections correctly and on time, and that you're balancing your carbohydrates with insulin.
Yes.
Because left untreated, this bidirectional relationship amplifies each part of this, which is fascinating for two reasons. One, we've seen COVID now linked to the development of diabetes, and we've seen that people with diabetes were subject to worse outcomes with their COVID. And dare I say, at the other end of the spectrum, the rectum and in the large intestine, we've spoken at length on this podcast and we've had journal clubs and congress sessions where people have come to speak to us about how poor bug quality, the so-called bad bugs that live in our colons, if they outnumber the good bugs, also are a risk factor for the development of diabetes and carrying excess visceral or waste-related body mass. So again, the deeper we dig here, we begin to see that perhaps some part of diabetes is in fact communicable. And it isn't necessarily a linear relationship between how poorly people have been perceived living their life and being inactive and eating the wrong things. It's not as simple and as linear as that. And oral health is becoming a big deal in the field of diabetes medicine.
Yes, I'll agree with that, Stan. In fact, I'll go further to say I'm of the view that within the diabetes clinic, we should have a resident oral health practitioner or even a specialist. For every patient who has diabetes should be screened regularly for periodontitis or periodontal disease, and they should be referred accordingly. Because more often than not, you may find that even the patient themselves are not aware that there is this relationship between them suffering diabetes and periodontitis. It's only later on when there is so much periodontal destruction. And by that time, the teeth are mobile. The patient stands the risk of losing the majority of their dentition, which affects their quality of life, as you said, Stan, mastication and all of that. So it's important that within the diabetes clinic, we have a resident oral healthcare practitioner who will screen the patient and actually educate the patients at the importance of visiting a dentist.
I would second that, Dr. Dan. In my lifetime seeing dentists, when I start talking to them about the oral microbiome or the relationship between oral health and systemic health, their eyes usually just glaze over. They don't have that insight. It's not a blame or anything. It's just the fact. And I think your recommendation is a good one. And I would like to see that happen in diabetes clinics across the world.
And just to add to that, Michael, we know that ordinarily people are not fans of a dentist for obvious reasons. And the reason why majority of people will visit a dentist if they have a toothache.
Right.
And that is more often related to dental caries and high cariogenic diet, as Stan was saying. But with periodontitis, it's a chronic, painless inflammatory condition.
A silent condition.
Exactly. It's almost like how we view
hypertension.
Like hypertension, Michael, I was going to say that. So patients will not ordinarily visit the dentist to say, look, I think I've got periodontitis.
Right.
Because in my clinical experience, the majority of patients are not even aware that they have periodontitis. So it is incumbent upon us as oral healthcare practitioners to bring it to the patient's attention and refer them for appropriate management.
A couple of things I want to ask for you to clarify for our listeners. What is the mechanism of increased dental caries, increased rates of periodontitis in people with poorly managed diabetes? Do you see that there are raised saliva glucose levels that maybe help form a substrate for increased growth of pathogenic bacteria? Is it a lazy leukocyte syndrome from inhibition of the body's innate immune responses? Just explain a little bit about the actual mechanisms.
As far as dental caries is concerned, that is more leaning towards the high cariogenic diet and the bacteria that are involved in fermenting carbohydrates. And we often talk about patients mustn't eat sticky sweets or toffees and things like that. Because when you have a substrate and you have bacteria, it's an ideal combination for caries to develop. So it's more about the stickiness and the amount of time that you've got this toffee sitting in contact with the tooth surface. And obviously the acidity that will happen because now the pH will drop. And then that will encourage demineralization of the tooth itself. And in the presence of bacteria, that will cause cavity because then the acid will demineralize the organic part of your hydroxyapatite, which is found in enamel, and lead to progression of dental caries from your enamel to dentine and eventually the pulp where you've got an actual toothache.
Right.
If you look on the other side with periodontitis, when we look at the bacteria and the immunity, as you said, it's a different ballgame. You need the host inflammatory response to actually mount a reaction against these periopathogens, you know, your P. gingivalis, your T. forsythia, etc. So it's the host inflammatory response that will actually result in periodontal destruction. The host is trying to get rid of the bacteria. So as a collateral, in a way, we get periodontal destruction. But there are certain individuals where this host inflammatory response is actually heightened. You get people where the host inflammatory response is heightened, and the opposite is you get people where the response is now dampened. And there's studies to show that there are people who have a genetic polymorphism of interleukin 1 beta, whereby it does not respond as well as it should against these periopathogens. And that's when patients present with aggressive forms of periodontitis, whereby the amount of destruction that we see in the mouth is not compatible with the amount of bugs, with the amount of bacteria that we see. But somehow, for some reason, there's major destruction. So it means the immune system is not on properly the way it should against the bacteria.
Right.
Those are the two ends of the disease.
So the clear message to me is that whether you've got a heightened immune response or a dampened immune response, the best thing is actually prevention.
Yes.
Healthy eating, good oral health care, and we'll discuss a little bit more about that just now, and regular preventative care with your oral health professional.
Yes, certainly. Prevention is better than cure.
Right.
And education. And I like how your center is very proactive when it comes to educating the public or people with diabetes. One of the material which I looked at was Language Matters.
Right.
And it was so encouraging for me to see how you are in tune, how you actually break down the conversation between somebody with diabetes and people in around such a person. And in one of your podcasts that I listened to, you had a guest in studio who was living with diabetes and they shared their journey. And it's always not easy for people to communicate when you're diagnosed with a condition. It's not always easy to communicate to strangers about it or to come out. But I think with the Language Matters article that you've shared with me, it is really amazing how you guys have actually packaged that. So let's talk about diabetes in a very humane way and not stigmatize diabetes. So that's good. Thanks.
Great. So we must actually give credit to Sweet Life for the production of that resource. Of course, we have been teaching that approach to the management of diabetes for many decades now, but they've certainly, as an advocacy entity, put that into a formal publication. Talking about diabetes advocacy, let's listen to the last of five important diabetes advocacy projects. They say diabetes advocacy will focus on in 2024. This week, they focus on food security for people with diabetes. And we'll be back with Dr. Dan in a moment.
One of SU Diabetes Advocacy's focus projects for 2024 is the Food Security Project. For some people with diabetes, food insecurity is their biggest issue. You shouldn't take insulin if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, but you need to take insulin if you're living with type 1 diabetes. Food grants and disability grants are not always available, but many organizations across South Africa have feeding schemes. What if we connected each public clinic with an organization so that individuals who are food insecure could have access to their feeding scheme? That's what we're trying to answer with this food security project. We have connected with Green Pop and Urban Harvest on their Family Food Gardens program. that aims to address the problem of food inaccessibility by equipping individuals with the skills to be able to sustainably grow their own food at home. We are currently seeking funding for this project. For more information on projects that SA Diabetes Advocacy is working on, please visit diabetesadvocacy.org.za.
Thanks, SA Diabetes Advocacy. We look forward to a message ahead in the podcast going forward. Michael had mentioned that we want to spend some time talking about what constitutes oral health and how to look after your oral cavity, but there's an itching thought I have here. Dr. Dam, we've had sessions as healthcare professionals where many of the silent aspects that may manifest in diabetes, such as hearing loss, have an association with vascular disease because they represent harms that occur at small blood vessel levels. Is there a link between gum and tooth disease and heart disease?
As far as that is concerned, there is a strong link between diabetes and periodontitis. In fact, the American Dental Association quoted periodontitis as a sixth complication of diabetes mellitus. So if you look at the microvasculature and what happens at the peripheral system, you can get an influence there where the circulatory system at the microvasculature is affected in terms of blood supply. And we know that then will affect the body's ability to mount an inflammatory response. But as far as cardiovascular disease is concerned, there is an association and there are many conditions as such where the association has been linked. Arthritis is one, cardiovascular disease is another, obesity is another, and stress also, at least an association has been linked. But the strongest risk factor that we have, and the studies can prove that, is with diabetes and smoking. Smoking is a risk factor.
Thanks for that, Dr. Dan. There's a toothpaste manufacturer who has a wonderful ad of a nurse practitioner who has spent her lifetime teaching young kids around South Africa, you know, how to brush their teeth. And this company maintains, I think they've educated up to 13 million kids and provided toothbrushes to this population. I think we all grew up with the idea that you needed to brush your teeth twice a day and you needed to floss. Quick fire for you here, Dr. Dan. Myth or fact? Brush your teeth twice a day? Should it be more often? Is there value in flossing or is that overstated?
Yes, we should brush, and there's no doubt about that. Twice a day, yes, I'm a strongest believer in that, in the morning and the evening before you go to bed. The whole idea behind that is you should allow your mouth to actually self-cleanse after brushing. And the thinking is at night as you're sleeping, at least you decrease the bacterial load after you brush. So twice a day is sufficient. You don't need, in my opinion, to brush more than that. And the main thing with brushing, and I'm glad you didn't mention the toothpaste as yet, because with brushing, we must actually dislodge the plaque or the biofilm, which is the main culprit housing all these bugs that we spoke about. Fair enough, you do have bugs that are on the tongue and all other plaque retentive areas in the mouth, like ill-fitting fillings or dentures, etc. But the main emphasis is brushing and dislodging the plaque. It's for that fact that when patients come for attention, we actually use a plaque disclosing agent so that the patients can appreciate what plaque looks like and where to actually identify areas of plaque. And this becomes even a good tool for us to monitor compliance. To say, if you tell me I've brushed this morning, Dr. Dan, before I came to see you, we can actually do a disclosing exercise and see how well you've brushed, or in fact, which areas have you missed this morning when you did your brushing exercise. So that's the importance of brushing. I cannot overemphasize them. Yes, when you throw in fluoridated toothpaste, and it varies, there's some who have antibacterial properties, especially chlorhexidine, which is a good antiseptic. There are toothpaste that have chlorhexidine in them, and those will argue well for patients who've got periodontitis, especially severe forms. So you've got fluoridated toothpaste on the one hand. You know fluoride is good in prevention of dental caries and strengthening the enamel. But on the other hand, our emphasis is more on antibacterial effect of your toothpaste. And flossing, Stan, it's the most underrated oral hygiene regimen that people take for granted. But as much as we brush, and we brush twice a day, there are areas which you cannot reach, especially interproximal, in between those teeth. Your toothbrush cannot reach. And with periodontitis, it normally starts in your posterior teeth, interproximal attachment loss. That's where then we find periodontitis being localized, if I can use that word. So it's important that you use a floss. There's a different types of floss that you can use, waxed and non-waxed. The waxed one allows for ease of manipulation interproximally because it's sort of lubricated to allow gentle manipulation between the interproximal areas. Mm. Some patients who've got tight contacts, you may find that they are discouraged from using a floss because they say, I can't get this thing in between my teeth. But if you use the waxed one, it can slide a little bit better. The NAN works, you can use it for patients who've got open contacts and there's no difficulties in manipulating the floors interproximally.
Is there any particular timing that should be used between eating and brushing and flossing?
Yes, a very good question. And patients often ask that question. I always advocate for brushing, flossing, and rinse in that order, because I believe after flossing, say you brush, which we all do.
Yes.
But after flossing, because now you've removed all the plaque that's sitting in the interproximal areas, you can then use your mouthwash to flush out whatever residue still left in between. But there is no time lapse between the brushing, flossing, and rinsing, if you ask me. It only comes into effect if you're using a chlorhexidine-based mouthwash, because the chlorhexidine, which is the active antibacterial ingredient, it does tend to cross-react with the toothpaste. So we always advise patients, if you're going to use a chlorhexidine-based mouthwash, you need to allow 30 minutes after brushing before you use the mouthwash, because the toothpaste and the mouthwash can sort of cancel the action of each other and render the mouthwash ineffective. So it's always advisable to wait 30 minutes after brushing if you're using a chlorhexidine-based mouthwash.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. And then just a quick question. Would you advise antibacterial toothpastes and mouthwashes for everyone or just people with periodontitis? My fear is always the commensals, the normal healthy commensals in your microbiome, that you would negatively affect those. Just if you can comment on that.
Correct. Thank you for the question. The chlorhexidine-based mouthwash, I always reserve it for patients who indeed have severe forms of periodontitis, meaning I won't recommend it for daily use.
Right.
And one of the reasons is because it has a staining effect as a side effect. If you use the chlorhexidine-based mouthwash for longer than 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
it stains the teeth brown and the teeth can become quite unsightly. So my advice will be no longer than 2 weeks with the chlorhexidine-based mouthwash. And a chlorhexidine-based toothpaste, I think also to a certain extent, but I haven't seen much displeasure from patients who use a chlorhexidine-based toothpaste as far as discoloration is concerned. But with a chlorhexidine-based mouthwash, that one certainly, you will have discoloration if you use it longer than 2 weeks.
And just any comment on the effect on the microbiome? Does it support the normal microbiome or not? That's my one concern.
Yes, because as an antiseptic, it does decrease the bacterial load,
mm-hmm.
but it will not completely wipe out the microbiome to a point that it destabilizes, or meaning you will be predisposed to fungal infection. In fact, some of these mouthwashes have a certain antifungal properties in them. But because the percentage is so minimal,
mm-hmm.
when 2% of chlorhexidine in many of these mouthwashes, it shouldn't affect the microbiome negatively.
Right. Thank you.
I think as we begin to wrap up this session, a couple of take-home messages for me are as follows. Yes, your mouth may have symptoms that are highly suggestive of just something at the level of the tooth, like a cavity or a keri, as they're referred to now. But if you've got loose tooth, maybe your bone health is poor. If you are not producing enough saliva, sure, you could have a small blockage or a narrowing in the duct running from the gland into the mouth. But you may have an autoimmune condition like Sjogren's syndrome. So the mouth is far more complex than we know it to be, and we recognize that just from the years of training dentists undergo, as well as the specialist training of 4 years just for that area size alone covers an enormous amount of medical matters, many of which reside elsewhere in the body.
Yeah.
And as we've heard through this session, diabetes has an adverse effect on many of the components that occur within the oral cavity, none more so than the gums and the ligaments and the quality of the tooth structure.
Correct.
So my take-home message for us all here is that including a dentist in the routine management of diabetes across the age spectrum is mandatory. And Michael, I think that's something that I'm going to start to entail for more and more in my clinical practice. Much like giving the flu jab every year, recommending hearing tests after the age of 50, I think Dr. Dan has left us with a solid footing in that respect.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more, Stan. We have been advocating for many years that the referral to a dentist should be part of the diabetes consultation. Dr. Dan has added in another component there of the oral health specialist who can really pick up a lot more. In consultations, I always look at people's teeth and I am surprised at how often I see visible furry plaque, visible calculus between the teeth. visible food stuck between the teeth. I'm often very aware of a malodor coming out of the mouth, which may indicate periodontitis, dental caries, and so on. And it really behoves anyone within the wider diabetes care team to refer regularly for this kind of care. And people with diabetes to take your oral health very seriously, because it is intimately related to your wider systemic health.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more there, Michael. And in tying with my talk last year at the postgraduate forum, I do believe that the mouth matters in people with diabetes. And I think this podcast also has proven that beyond reasonable doubt. So thank you for inviting me.
It's our pleasure, Dr. Dan.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on this, the 46th episode of Not Artificially Sweetened. Remember, you can catch us each week on this free educational podcast on Spotify, Pocket Cast, the Apple Podcast, as well as the Listen mobile audio app. Give us a like, give us a share. Whatever you do, don't forget to join us. Whether you're a person with diabetes, somebody who's caring for somebody with diabetes, or a healthcare professional yourself, may the week ahead be a blessed one, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you, Stan. Dr. Dan, we really appreciate you giving up your time to explore some aspects of oral health care with us. I don't think we've covered even a scratch of the surface of this. If you don't mind, we would love to get you back on a future episode. But till then, thank you for being with us. And I hope that your messages are well received by all listening.
Yes, thank you, Michael. And thank you, Stan, for the invite and the wonderful work that the CDE is doing in collaboration with specialists like us in management of people living with diabetes mellitus. Thank you very much. Bye.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Dan. Listeners, thank you for giving us of your time. We appreciate it, and we hope that you will catch us again next week. Over and out from us. Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened, where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.